Hey, and welcome to FutureThinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to FutureThinkers.org/start. All Future Thinkers episodes are now on video. To watch the premiere of each episode and join the discussion live, subscribe to our YouTube channel at FutureThinkers.org/YouTube.
Hey guys, this is the final installment of our series on Jungian archetypes. This one's going to be The Witch for the Feminine Archetypes, and then we're finished. So why don't we start to define what the witch is?
So in this context, we are not talking about the wicked witch that is often portrayed in, you know, Disney films and in Christian lore. We are talking about the reclaimed archetype of the witch, which could be positive or negative depending on, you know, depending on many factors. But we are not talking about the evil witch by default. We are actually going to focus on the good witch.
I don't know if you guys have noticed, but Sabrina the Teenage Witch remake was just published on Netflix this year. And we watched it all the way through. And it was very much to do with like Satan, devil worship. Like she has to go through her like dark trial, like she becomes 16 and has to write her name in the book of the devil and everything, and it was like super satanic, the whole thing.
So this is a complete misinterpretation of what the witch archetype is, and so we'll tell you in this episode why that is. We'll go through the history of witches and how they came to be seen the way that they're seen. But actually, since the 60s, there's been a revival of the witch archetype in the positive light, and we'll also talk about that.
Right.
So some of the key characteristics of the witch is that she is the seeker and bringer of deep and secret knowledge. So this could be anything to do with ideas, with art, music, science, or it could be spiritual. But it's basically, she's a parallel of the masculine magician archetype, where she's interested in knowledge that is beyond the mundane and beyond the common sense. So things that require deep study, often initiation, you know, trials, it's knowledge that is not easily acquired. And she's also a creative force. So she brings forth ideas that disturb and destabilize the current values and current order, which is one of the reasons actually the church in particular feared witches, because they were speaking out against what the church was doing.
They also did some other things too. Like they performed abortions. They knew kind of how to make herbs. They, you know, the whole cauldron thing was actually kind of real because they knew quite a bit about medicine. And
yeah, exactly. So why don't we talk a little bit about the history? So witches actually come from paganism, which was kind of the general term for tribal religions before agriculture and before Christianity. And so these people worshipped nature, and they had a deep understanding of nature, both inner and outer. Like they understood human nature, human mind, human spirit, but also outer nature, like herbs and animals and how all of those things can be used for healing, namely. So these women were, a lot of them were basically medicine women. They were healers. They were midwives. They were spiritual leaders. They were advisors. They were elders. And when Christianity came about, Christianity saw them as a threat to the order that they tried to establish, because pagans worshipped nature. They worshipped many gods and many spirits, and Christianity wanted to worship a single male god. And so women who had, you know, status and power in these tribal societies posed a threat. And, you know, the church, you know, wanted to control what they saw as divine order, which was, you know, birth and death. And so since these women were midwives, they delivered babies and also performed abortions. The church saw that as them having power outside of, you know, the church's control. And so they tried to put a stop to that. And the whole thing with the cauldron is, as you said, is because these women knew a lot about herbs and the healing arts, and they made medicine. They knew how to heal people. And again, the church saw this as, you know, something that was outside of their control, that was, you know, meddling with life and death, and they wanted people to go to the church for all of it. And the last thing is that the church didn't like that these pagans, a lot of them, were unmarried or they were non-monogamous and the church wanted people to be, you know, straight, bonded by marriage and not have children outside of wedlock. And so that's why they condemned these women for not following their rules. And so in the Middle Ages, there was this one particular book that I can't remember the name of that wrote in great detail the in all of the different ways that these witches supposedly served the devil and, you know, went against the rule of the church and how they should be tortured and punished and burned at the stake, which set off the witch trials. And so ever since then, the witch became kind of a character of the shadows. And even though a lot of these healers continued to practice in secrecy, the church condemned them. And so until today, we have this kind of leftover idea of the witch as being wicked old woman who is, you know, eating babies and brewing poison in the cauldron.
So in today's modern context, the profession of the witch is probably most commonly in like the actor, technology, entrepreneur, inventor. Yeah. What else?
Writers, musicians, could also be forensic scientists, you know, like trying to uncover mysteries and secrets. Yeah, there are a lot of kind of not very mystical professions. Or it could be mystical, you know, she could be a healer or a spiritual teacher or a herbalist. Those are popular.
And it's mainly because it boils down to this desire to uncover hidden knowledge.
Yeah.
Essentially, right? That's what most of these have to do with each other.
Yeah, and bring forth new ideas that haven't been thought about. So, you know, she could even be a politician or, a business visionary where she's kind of destabilizing or disrupting the established order. Mm-hmm. So, and it's interesting, actually, because in technology, we've seen a little bit of a resurgence of this witch archetype where women in tech are kind of adopting this role and even kind of jokingly saying that they're witches.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen that quite a bit, actually, in the blockchain space. It's kind of strange.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the childhood archetype. So what does the active shadow look like in the childhood archetype?
Well, first of all, the bright version is, we could call it the magical child. So she feels a deep connection with nature. She's very, very interested in gaining knowledge and learning things and understanding how different things work. Things that are unspoken. She's often very intuitive and kind of understands how things work without having been explicitly told. And so sometimes in the active shadow, this can get her into trouble, where she will purposely use her intuitions to manipulate people or trick them into things. Or this child is often very imaginative, so sometimes she will act as if, you know, something is happening to make people, you know, do something when she's actually just pretending. So you brought up the idea from, or you brought up the character from Rick and Morty.
Right. So there's, I forgot about that one, actually. Beth Sanchez, she has one full episode in Rick and Morty where they go over her background. And as a child, she's basically like a psychopath. She's a murderess. And so she has Rick invent a whole bunch of different things for her, like a sentient switchblade.
Mind control, hair clips.
Yeah, that's right.
Like rainbow duct tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's obviously pretty extreme shadow version, but it's pretty funny. And then the flip side, the passive shadow of the child, is the disenchanted child. And so this is when she becomes incapable of seeing the magic in things and seeing how evil could be transmuted into good or pain could be transmuted into learning. And she can fall into depression and listlessness and kind of basically lose faith that things could be better. So as we mentioned before, the witch archetype, one of the main traits is imagining a world that is better than the current one. And so when a child loses this capability, she falls into the passive shadow.
So I'm interested to know, I mean, we know from following a lot of Jordan Peterson's work and a lot of, you know, you've got a background in psychology and we've talked about this quite a lot, that in kind of a broad generalization, women are more interested in people, men are more interested in things. So from the magician and the witch archetype, you can kind of see the magician's more of the inventor. What is the sort of modern context for the witch?
Yeah, you're right. So in the masculine version of the magician archetype, this often ends up being kind of very technical and inventor character, but it could manifest that way in women too, like Hedy Lamarr or Marie Curie, who are women scientists and inventors. But it could also be more to do with ideas and feelings. For example, a lot of the famous women writers embody this archetype, like Margaret Atwood, who wrote The Handmaid's Tale, and J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter. They're both definitely the witch archetype. But as well, it could be actors or singers, like Lana Del Rey is kind of a lover-witch combination.
So when this manifests in the adult version, the shadows in the adult version, what are we looking at? There's the manipulator, which is also similar to the magician.
Yeah. And so this is pretty much your standard wicked witch archetype. So her biggest vice is power. So because she is often quite wise and older, she has, you know, seen some shit in life, and she often understands how people's minds work, she can fall into a pattern of manipulating people and abusing her power. And so, you know, we see Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty as this kind of character, Bellatrix Lestrange, or the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. There are a lot of these kinds of characters, and I mean, that's the typical older wicked witch character who abuses her power, and a lot of the time is portrayed as being jealous of younger women and trying to prevent them from achieving their dreams.
It's interesting, it's woman versus woman. There's also a component of just men being so expendable and useless that they're barely even focused on. It's like the true rival is the young, beautiful, smart woman.
Yes. Yeah. The queen in Game of Thrones.
Oh, Daenerys. The Red Queen, or the Red Priestess.
Yeah, so Melisandre is a witch character for sure. But also Cersei gets a little bit witchy in her older years when she starts wearing all black and she's playing with the explosive fire, the wildfire.
Right.
So she becomes an evil queen, which is related to the evil witch character.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the passive shadow, which is the fool.
Mm-hmm. And so in this case, the witch archetype may have knowledge and may have understanding, but she doesn't know how to apply it, or she thinks that action is not necessary to apply things. So she kind of is just off in her fantasy world.
Hmm. So the passive version of the witch is someone who kind of needs to manifest the Amazon character to establish boundaries and give herself enough room to actually manifest. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. Because she's often very intuitive and sensitive, so she can sometimes take on the feelings and desires of others unknowingly and start basically acting out other people's wishes.
I've noticed this. This is an interesting one. You know, I was talking the other day with a friend of mine about he's a very emotional person and finds himself kind of going on this roller coaster ride. And I was like, are you aware of when you're picking up other people's emotions and just kind of sticking with that? Because we were talking about like a family problem I've got, and I just kind of touched on this subject, and it to me, I'd already processed my feelings about it. I've already been thinking about it. And then I hit him with it, and he was kind of like, whoa, shit. And then he was basically like depressed the rest of the time we were hanging out together. And I was like, you're really affected by other people's emotions, aren't you? And then we got into this whole thing. So in this sense, it seems like the passive shadow would be very easy to kind of either be manipulated or just constantly be picking up other people's emotions and then not realize that she's actually doing that, that those emotions are not owned by her.
Yeah, so that trait is called being an empath. When you empathize with people so deeply that you just pick up their emotions and start feeling them, And, you know, if they're heavy emotions, it can really affect you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this really important element of both the magician and the witch where they want to share the knowledge that they have with the world. And the kind of, you really easily step into the shadow when you don't do this.
Mm-hmm. And also it can show up as deep depression or just intense kind of feeling of uselessness and rage if the positive manifestation of the witch doesn't share her gifts with the world. And so this is, we talked about this in the masculine magician archetype episode, that this is a deep need, that this is not just kind of an optional thing, that this is something that you start feeling very deeply when you've acquired knowledge, when you've gained a certain amount of deep experience, that you have to bring it back to the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed this when I was learning some scripting stuff for like editing and just kind of automating the home. Like I learned all this stuff. I was really excited about it. And then I was kind of bummed out. I had no one to share it with because it's like no one really cares about scripting or home automation in Bulgaria, it seems like. So I was like, there's no one I can share this with. That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What kind of things do you feel that, well, I guess we have a pretty good outlet with the podcast, but.
Yeah, and actually we're perfect timing to talk about this. So actually we're working on a couple of courses and we want to, you know, kind of synthesize all of our knowledge and experience from the last 10 plus years of traveling the world and being entrepreneurs and exploring consciousness deeply and, you know, learning about all these different subjects and talking to these really intelligent people who've thought a lot about how to make the world a better place. And we want to synthesize all of that into a course that can be practical and that people can actually apply to their lives. Because some of our podcasts are pretty heady and very abstract. So we want to give people something that's more applicable.
Yeah. Okay. So one more thing to kind of round everything off. The feminine archetypes have kind of not a mirror version of the masculine as we've covered. There's a lot of initiation by nature. And for that reason, there's actually kind of a nebulous view and not a lot of agreement on what the four, if we're going to choose four archetypes are for the feminine. And some people have said there's a fifth one, which is the queen,
mm-hmm.
which does parallel the masculine. So what is the queen and why is it different than, you know, why do all of them add up to five instead of four for the masculine?
I think in part that has to do with just the different authors and their different approaches to archetypes. Like the four masculine archetypes, that's just a very popular piece of literature that really stuck and a lot of people use it, but there isn't really an equivalent for the feminine archetypes. And so in some literature, you'll see seven archetypes or 14 or, you know, five or four or three, it varies. But another reason that I think it's so fragmented is because the feminine roles in modern society are more fragmented. Whereas for a man, I would say it's a bit easier to be able to integrate all the four archetypes and actually live as the king. Well, that's three, basically three in one. Magician, warrior, and lover.
It's difficult still, but it's a lot more straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And you can decide to do any of them. Whereas for a woman, there's a lot more to do with your situation and your environment and nature. Where you find yourself.
Yeah.
With men, it's just like, I want to develop that one. I'm interested in that. I'm going to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. And also for women, the archetypes are a lot more to do with relationship. So if a woman is not in a relationship, then she can't develop some of these archetypes fully because they have so much to do with how you relate to others. And of course, the mother archetype has to do with motherhood. And you can definitely develop some of those traits if you're not an actual mother. And we talked about that in the episode. But it is still kind of not a full expression. So with the feminine archetypes, it's kind of a natural life progression where you go through them sequentially. And at the end of your life, if you have gone through all of them and manifested all of them, you kind of end up as a well-rounded queen character. And so that would be the Amazon fully manifested. So that's driven, goal-oriented, great boundary setting, very clear objectives, you know, great at planning, organized, knows how to instruct other people to do things. And then the lover, which would be sensual, you know, fully embodies her sexuality, not repressed, creative, loving, connects with others very well, empathetic. Then the witch, so, you know, brings forth new ideas, creative, imaginative, wants to learn deep knowledge, wants to teach people and mentor people. And then the mother, so she's a mother, she's nurturing, caring, protective, appreciates all beings, wants to elevate all beings to their greatest potential. And so all of these combined would make the queen. And so whereas masculine power comes in the form of kind of keeping order and also elevating other people, feminine power, I would say
it does it more naturally. Masculine kind of is, it's a deep sign of wisdom, I think, to turn around and share that knowledge in any of the archetypes, to share and protect. It's something that even in our modern age, people in their 40s, 50s, people well established in their lives have not figured out how to manifest this, never mind young people. However, I think in a lot of cases in motherhood, that sort of thing is just a lot more automatic.
The giving.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I agree. But some of the growth aspects might not be as intuitive for women.
So, for example, do you mean if they were to choose to work on any of the masculine archetypes?
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a huge amount of choice and drive to go into any of those things because it's just a ton of work. And I think that's partially why there is that kind of gap between men and women as it manifests. Because, I mean, in the grand sense of the evolutionary kind of story of humanity, men are more expendable. And they were able to achieve a lot more rewards by taking a lot higher risks.
Yeah.
So because they're expendable, some of them would die off from taking the wrong risk, but others would get these giant rewards because they could put the time, the energy, take the risks, that sort of thing that women or mothers couldn't necessarily do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a funny kind of, you know, I know a lot of the SJWs are going to hear this thing and think it's very, I don't know, I don't even know what they think.
Not politically correct,
exactly. But I mean, you really can't argue with nature in this sense. I would be really interested to hear what it would look like for gay and lesbian couples or just single people that are gay and lesbian too. Like, how would these archetypes manifest? Would it be any different? Is it just a matter of kind of like a polarity? And you just find yourself somewhere on the spectrum.
Maybe.
I mean, obviously the motherhood thing is kind of like out of the picture for men. And we've already established a lot of the masculine archetypes you can kind of point your finger at and choose what you want to do. But some of the feminine archetypes, I wouldn't necessarily say they're easy to choose if you're a man.
I think men can definitely connect to their feminine side and they would have to do it through the senses. So, you know, by really, really embodying your body and noticing how it feels, noticing all the little, you know, electrical impulses in your fingers and noticing how the wind feels on your skin and how...
So be deep in the body and the senses. Yeah, that I think is hard. I know that's hard for me and I think that would be hard for a lot of men.
Mm-hmm. But I know that some men do have a tendency towards that or talent for it. And anyone can develop this ability if they just practice. I mean, we talk about that being one of the types of meditation that you can do. You just meditate on the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can get really deep. Like it, sometimes in deep meditation, I actually felt like waves of electrical impulses going through my body. I felt my field of vision pulsating with like it getting brighter and darker as blood passes through my retina. Like you can get really deep in the senses. Like you can actually feel the binary space between nerve impulses where there's just the void there's like signal void, signal void, signal void. Like, yeah, you can get really deep into that stuff.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of skeptics about that, but I mean, it does take many, many years of doing this.
Yeah.
And obviously our kind of modern lifestyle doesn't allow for that amount of time and space to be made to just do nothing for years. But
yeah,
you know, we've been fortunate enough to do that with this kind of nomadism thing, passive income thing, and mm-hmm. just a deep interest in this stuff.
Yeah.
But
actually, that's one other aspect of the witch archetype that I haven't mentioned is an understanding of non-duality and that reality is not solid. That when you explore the realms quite deeply, it just becomes clear how everything is constructed, how meaning is constructed, how sensory experience is constructed, how thoughts are constructed, and how all of it is just some, you know, it's almost like virtual reality. It's a representation of data, but it's not reality itself. It's just a screen onto which we project something, a picture that has some sort of meaning so that our mind can understand what is going on.
So I want to get back to the realm of the ultra material and practical for people, just so they can pull something out of this if they don't have the time to investigate their own minds for that long, because this is sort of a hack. I've used it that way as well. I've used all the masculine archetypes as a hack to get into a certain space. If I need to, you know, if I want to push really hard at the gym, the warrior archetype. If I want to negotiate something in, you know, a business kind of contract or a business negotiation, then it would be the warrior, it'd be the king.
King.
Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I'm creating, it's the magician. The lover is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's quite easy to find where your shadow is if you just look at the situation that you're in and look at the behavior that you want to manifest. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that you like envision a warrior or you envision all the traits. You can kind of ask yourself, what would a warrior do in this situation? What would someone who has these characteristics do in this situation? And then by asking yourself that question, you can move into that state and just, you know, do whatever you thought of in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So that's actually a really good point. And maybe we can think about what kind of questions people can ask themselves to put themselves into each archetype. Ooh, yeah, we might add that to the show notes. Or I've been actually writing on the subject quite a bit. And so maybe I'll just publish some of my writings and include that. That would be cool.
Cool.
So for the witch, ask yourself, what is the perspective that is not mine?
Oh, what? Yeah. That's a really good one. Like, are these feelings mine? That's another one
mm-hmm.
from, you know, the example of my friend. Like,
yeah.
is this something I'm taking on or is it mine?
Uh-huh. And also for the perspective is like, what is a complete opposite perspective? Try to put yourself into the head of somebody who isn't you.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, just what is a different way of looking at this? You know, if I were not a woman, if I were a man, old, black, you know, poor, like put yourself into the shoes of somebody who's completely different than you.
Yeah. I hear a lot of people say that that's impossible to do. Like, you can't possibly know my perspective. Therefore, you know, I'm a victim and you're the oppressor or that kind of thing. And it's like, if we didn't have the ability to do that, we would never have gotten this far as a species. Imagine each other's perspectives, you know? Like, that's actually not a really difficult thing to do. You have to be able to put yourself in someone else's perspective if you want to negotiate a situation or get through an argument or come to a mutual understanding with another person. You have to be able to visualize their perspective, right?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you can't fully simulate it because you don't have the same physiology and there's a lot of experience that is embodied. But you can still get closer if you try.
I always just ask myself, like, well, I think to myself, if I were in their shoes, I would make the exact same decision. So what would it take for me to make the decision? You know, what kind of background would I require? What kind of situation? And you can obviously pull a bunch of like different events, but I think essentially humans are mostly the same. And you put someone in that person's genetic and cultural disposition, and they're going to react the exact same way. It's going to be almost a rote script for each person. So if you can come up with the same behavior and the acting the same way as someone else by simulating that, then you're going to be, I mean, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah. Two simple questions that you can ask yourself is, what do they want and what do they fear? Like, what's the carrot and what's the stick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much everything that motivates you to do something.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Okay, so another way to put yourself into the witch archetype is to imagine a reality that is different than what you think is real or what your current situation is. So, and I think actually this trait is going to be really, really important going into the future because the world is in transition. We're going through some really unprecedented changes. You know, we might face the decline or collapse of large civilizations or parts of the civilization. And I think imagining a better future, a different future that works for all of us and all the animals and the plants and the biosphere is going to be extremely important. Because if we're just, you know, feeding our own biases back to ourselves in this endless loop and...
Or if we're just constantly responding, that's the other thing. Like we're almost always responding to what's going on in the environment and not a whole lot of planning takes place or visualization of exactly what it is that you want.
Yeah.
In the context of not just your own life, but how you would like to be in a society. That's a huge thing that most people don't do. They're almost always just responding to what they don't want.
Yeah. Yeah. And so visualizing what you want, not just for yourself, but for the world is... how you can put yourself into the witch archetype and be extremely useful for the future. In fact, I think it's one of the things that might end up saving the world. For visionaries to envision a future, a society, a biosphere that is better than what we have now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cool. I think we can end it there. So any of the links, any of the mentions, anything is going to be in the description. You can also check out the show notes by waiting for the message at the end of this video. As well, if you guys are interested in hearing more about the course that we're working on, you can go to futurethinkers.org. And if you look at the nav menu in the top right of the screen, there's going to be like a take our survey button that you can click. And then you can kind of like give us ideas of what you would be interested in. You can choose from a menu of what we're actually working on and kind of vote on what you'd like to be released first.
Mm-hmm.
So that would really help us out and we can get this content out to you a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can make a pretty link, futurethinkers.org/courses.
Not courses, because that's going to be used in the future. It should be something unique.
Yeah, and so it will be used in the future. So obviously, if you're listening to this 3 years from now, it will be the actual courses page.
Okay, yeah. We'll do that. Futurethinkers.org/courses. We'll take you to the survey.
Okay.
Cool. All right. See you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye. This episode is brought to you by Qualia, a nootropic supplement that helps support mental performance and mood. To get 10% off, use the code FUTURE at checkout. And to learn more about neurohacking, visit futurethinkers.org/neuro.
Thanks for tuning in to Future Thinkers. For all the books, resources, and mentions from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/80. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell icon to get notified of new videos. You can also follow us on social media to stay connected. If you'd like to get a t-shirt like the new Make America Think Again, go to futurethinkers.org/store. If you like what we do and you want to help us make more podcasts and videos, consider donating or becoming a patron at futurethinkers.org/support. Also visit our sponsor Qualia and use the coupon code FUTURE to get 10% off your purchase.